Hi, I'm Jen Sherlock, and welcome to my lifestyle podcast, Live Without a Net. The podcast showcases people who live fearlessly and have the ambition to create something. I'll showcase change makers who have decided to let go of their safety net in order to survive. So let's jump right in. Hi, I'm Jen Sherlock. Welcome to Live Without a Net. I have the CEO of Apurion today, Michael Dersham. Most call him Dersh, and he owns a global healthcare tech company, and it's pretty amazing, and we're here to tell you all about it. But first, since we mostly talk about entrepreneurship here, we want to just kind of dig in to see what Dersh is all about and see, you know, how he got the bug for entrepreneurship. So tell us, when did it start?
Well, first, Jen, thanks for inviting me on. I was, you know, excited when you gave me the introduction. So, ready to rock and roll. So, you know, I guess, you know, looking at when I started my entrepreneurship, when I was in junior high, I had a door-to-door shoe catalog business. And it was pretty funny because I was, not petting it, but I was successful at it. And all of a sudden, one of the regional managers caught eye of it and came to my house or our house. And my mom answered the door and they asked, you know, where Michael Dersham was. And she said, oh, he's at school. And he said, oh, that's great. He's putting himself through college, you know, by selling. And she said, what are you talking about? He's in junior high school. And so it kind of took him back. And then in high school, I had a chimney sweep business as I was playing sports. So yeah, I've always had the bug, and then started, really my kind of serial entrepreneurship and serious businesses, if you will, in my 20s, and now created, you know, multiple companies in the greater healthcare and pharma space.
You do wear some sharp shoes. I noticed that yesterday.
I would show you the ones today, but anyway.
It'd be hard, right? At that time, did your mom just laugh, or did you keep it going with the shoe business?
No, I mean, it kind of dwindled out, you know, just, you know, went on to other things, you know, but yeah, my mom was, it was kind of cool because everybody knew that I had it. And so it just became, the word viral wasn't back then, but it, you know, just became viral, you know, my parents' friends, and then they would have people over and I'd have my catalogs out, and yeah, it was pretty cool.
I love that. And a chimney sweep company is pretty amazing as well. And then in college, did you keep going besides just studying?
In college, not real entrepreneurship. I was a quote unquote tour guide. You know, we like to call ourselves admission representatives, but yeah. And I kind of had this claim to fame that I had the highest ratio of applicants to tours of anybody ever I went to undergrad at Dickinson, and it was kind of cool. I kind of went against like their conventional wisdom, you know, on how you would do it. And I think parents and prospective students, you know, enjoyed that candor and sincerity, which oftentimes, you know, you just toe the college line, you know?
Yeah, that helps with the sales, with entrepreneurship and any other businesses you may have had. So that's great that you put yourself in that environment from a younger age.
Yeah, and I got my first job offer from a guy who was regional director of a computer company. Who I gave his daughter a tour like 2 years prior. And he said, Hey, Dersh, when you get out, if you know, you ever want to talk, you know, I'd be happy to. So I called him and, you know, he remembered. Of course, his daughter went to school at Dickinson. I haven't told that story in a while, but it's pretty good.
Oh, that's great. So then what got you into creating a global healthcare solution company, Apurion? And tell us, you know, where the whole journey, I guess, started influencing you within the healthcare world.
Yeah, I guess going back, because a lot of things that we're doing now, because we've straddled so many things in the greater healthcare and pharma space over my career. And then, you know, the team, a lot of the team that's been with me. For instance, in my 20s, my brother and I started and created the first reverse distributor for the pharmaceutical industry. That was and that was, pretty crazy that guys in their 20s, I mean, and that was before, the web and Facebook, when people in their 20s started companies and people threw money at them. I like to say I was like at web zero, back then. But yeah, I mean, to think that large companies like Pfizer and Merck, Cardinal Health, major health systems actually, gave us, or had confidence in us to assure probably 10% of their product line that when expired, recalled, damaged, so that it wouldn't end up in our, our gray markets, our playgrounds, our beaches, and to be the first ones to ever be granted licenses by the FDA and DEA, and actually had a meeting with the chief counsel of the DEA. And he was intrigued just that these young guys were trying to take care of a major problem for the industry and quite for the environment and for us as US and global citizens.
Right, that's so interesting. I know you told me all about the pharmaceutical company that you created in your 20s, and I had never known about that.
Yeah,
So.
a lot of what I've done is now kind of what I say de facto, or it's just the way things are. And I don't wear, I don't wear it on my sleeve on a, people in business know, but from a social setting, I was the CEO of Pharmasset, which was the hepatitis C company that we brought out of Emory University, which led to the drugs Harvoni and Sovaldi that are on the markets now, pretty much eradicating hepatitis C around the globe. Largest drug launch ever. It was ultimately sold to Gilead for billions of dollars. But the reason I bring it up is I had a good friend of mine who I've boated with. I've known him for, I don't know, 15, 20 years, boated with him for at least a dozen of them. And during the pandemic, he was down in Florida, came back, he's older than I am. But long story short, we're on his boat and I said, JD, how, how'd you make it through COVID? He says, I don't know if my wife told you, but I had a bout with hepatitis C. And he said, but you know what? There's these drugs on the market now that you take it, Harvoni, and it erratic, like it wiped out my hep C. And I said, JD, I was the CEO of that company prior to it going to Gilead. He's like, come on, you're full, because of it. And but it's kind of, I guess, somewhat humbling, but also, when he then saw that, yes, that was true, that how can a friend that you have for 15 years not know that, So that's
I love
kind
that
of interesting.
story. Yeah, like comes full circle. So tell us about Apeiron. How did that come about, and where do you see the future of healthcare?
Thanks. So, we started a period when we started. We were a payment company, so the founding name of the company was MA Pay, and it was really trying to take a look at the dysfunction in healthcare payments that happens, even in our own lives. Just think about trying to make a payment to, or trying to understand your insurance bill or EOB. So we were trying to bring some clarity to that, and so we started this payment platform, whereby. You could, an individual on a Sunday night could pay any of their medical bills on one site, one click, and then the platform would be smart enough to drop it off to those individual providers. And we have some good intellectual property around that. But we found out early on that we had access to all of this data that was attached to the payment. And I never forget, like our tech guy, he said to me, because the night that we did the first payment, and you know me well enough, Jen, like I get a little passionate about things when it works. So as an entrepreneur, you're thinking that you'll be able to take that first payment, that the network and the system will work, that a patient will actually do it. And that first payment, I don't know, it was like $36.82 or something, it came through. And we're like high-fiving and having champagne, just going, holy, it works, right? And so, but then all of our tech guys, you know, they called me and said, Durst, we've got a problem. We got all this clinical data or diagnosis codes, procedure codes, all this stuff that comes with it. How we, it's a problem. We're going to have to strip it away. And I said, what do we have? He said, we told you, we have all this data. I was like, oh, so we can turn lemon into lemonade. And I think a lot of times, Jen, and over my career and when I coach entrepreneurs or I sitting on a board or something, I see that all the time where you started on the process in one way. And then all of a sudden, there's this watershed event that happens, which changes the entire either business model itself, the projection of the company. And so that was the first one. Then the second one for Aperion, because we started in blockchain then right before the pandemic, seeing how, again, from a data perspective, how blockchain could work, how we could provide what's called interoperability of data in healthcare. So that means that, my data that I'm getting from the local hospital, my insurance company, the urgent care, that's me. So I should have more data on myself, and particularly around healthcare. I have more data on my Amazon history than I have on my healthcare data, right? I mean, that's a little nutty when you think about it.
Right, it is.
And so, I can tell you, probably the first DVD that I bought on Amazon, and I can't tell you, I don't know, an MRI I had in 2 years ago. But
right.
But anyway, my point is then as before the pandemic, we started to really play, not play around, but kind of utilize blockchain where that can come into play. And I gave a talk in Bermuda about where I thought blockchain and could really be impactful in healthcare and pharma. It was a global tech conference. And the premier of Bermuda came up to me, or a former premier, who I didn't know from Adam. And he said, Durst, hi, I'm Sir John Swan, and introduced himself as former premier. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. But this is, if you think about it, Jim, this is the head of a country, the patriarch of the country comes up
right.
to me.
Yeah,
and,
that's wonderful.
And starts rattling off all this stuff and says, hey, Durst, do you think that, the things that you talked about up there could be impactful for Bermuda? And I looked at him and I said, Sir John, I said, and then he jumped ahead and said, if you agree to come down and take a look, because again, I think everybody knows, and this is where we sit now, several years later, we can talk about that if you like, but everybody, whether it's in the US, Bermuda, India, Africa, Paraguay, they all know that healthcare delivery, healthcare payment, healthcare data, healthcare map is broken. And so how are we going to fix it? And so from a macro perspective, we all know it's broken, but what are these areas that we can actually show impact and drive change? So he said to me, I'd be happy to open up, his Rolodex to folks that are, senior people in insurance and banking industry, regulators, everything. So I said to him, I said, well, as a good entrepreneur, and one that honeymooned in Bermuda 20 years prior, sure, I'm game. I'll come down. I'll bring my wife, come down on a Wednesday, have meetings on Thursday. Long story short, right before the pandemic, we were the first company ever to sign an entire country for all of their healthcare data, all their healthcare messaging, all of their in-border, cross-border, private sector, public sector to ride on chain. And that was the country of Bermuda. And I remember when that went out on social media and the Premier Burt, who's become a good business friend of mine, he was out in front of all of these digital asset regulation and everything like that. I remember a CEO of a healthcare system here who I'm good buddies with. He saw it on social media. He's like, Durst, Like, how does that happen? Like, a lot of people are happy if they sold a hospital or if they
Right.
stole a, you've signed an entire country.
Yeah.
Like it's, and you know how I talk, Jen. You know, it, especially when we tell, you know, our, the story where we are now, it is, some of it sounds wacky, some of it sounds far-fetched, but when you come inside the tent or you understand what we're doing, I think I mentioned to you pre-call that now, just 2 weeks ago, we had a prime minister of a country send an unsolicited email to us to see if there were things that he that we could do for his country. Like, and I say that to people, and they're like, "Dirt, that can't be true. Like, there is no way that a prime minister of a country is sitting there and saying, I, let me find Dersh's email or have his EA do it, and then send an email and saying, hi, this is who I am. Can you help?" Right.
That's a huge accomplishment.
It is not. And I think that's one of the challenges that we have at Aperio now, because I mean, we'll always be an aspirational company, and I think it's always great that entrepreneurs are aspirational. But I also think we're grounded in reality now that we're, you know, deploying things not only within the U.S. but also within the CARICOM or Caribbean region, LATAM. And now we have some really, really big adoptions in India, some of the largest blockchain utility in any industry, bar none. We are creating now in India, and yeah, it's pretty fascinating. But I think now we have some really good clarity and vision on how to really drive this transformational change. And we kind of we're also in a kind of enviable position, like when I mentioned before about, you know, people in these regions or countries or state, you know, where they have a pride in their country, but they know that these things are broken. And so I, you know, I say this sometimes, we, I can hear it almost every day, like every day that, you know, that we're grinding, you know, I hear those cheerleaders, right? You know, they may not be contracted with, they might not be vendors, but they know of us. They've heard it, we're part of it. And I can, you know, we as a kind of team, we can, we do hear them, and they're saying, you got to win. You know, you got to. And I think that's what keeps us just persevering and just saying, you know, because I remember when we created our first application in Bermuda, everybody was like, never work. Nobody would take it, they won't use it. And then we started showing it, and then it was like, okay, well, they're using it, but it's a small country. Okay, well, why don't we hand you India? How's that? You know, and they're like, okay, you know, right now we're doing some incredible things in the school marketplace, data gathering, creating digital medical twins of the children for the parents, you know, for the rest of their lives, all this stuff, some things going on with the Gates Foundation, hopefully to get early indication of rare childhood diseases, really impactful stuff. And you know, I sit there and I'm like, what are the naysayers going to say now? You know, you said, well, bring it to Christ, the first school we did had, Jen, we had 2.5 million students in that school, like craziness. And so I think if I, if one of your questions was, you know, how do you get, how do you get to this point? And you know, a lot of times people say, boy, you must have been razor focused on stuff, right? Like, boy, you, and I say to myself and to everybody and to entrepreneurs, I think focus is retrospective. I know that's kind of a weird way of looking at it, but of course, when you are, when you get to that level of success, you can, it looks like you had razor focus, but I got to tell you, there was a lot of stuff that was thrown up, rabbit holes that went down. Finally, though, you find this clarity, you find adoption and engagement, and that's when you have to really execute and drive it. So.
Any setbacks you've had while creating this tech software and
Yeah, from a macro perspective, there's been a heck of a lot of headwinds. We had this thing called COVID and pandemic.
right.
That, I
Oh,
mean, it's one thing to hit businesses, but to hit a, I mean, imagine that we sign our the first country ever. We're like setting up our teams to be flying back and forth to Bermuda, and the pandemic hits. Not really good optics for, US business people to be disruptive in the health system in Bermuda during a pandemic. Just saying.
right.
But so I think that, and then of course, even though, there's a difference between blockchain and crypto, we get caught up in that a lot. And so, during those couple of crypto winners, the FTX debacles and the ICO blowups and stuff like that, we had to fight against that. The recession and just the election mess, not only here in the US, but last year there was elections all across the globe. So I say, that's from a macro perspective, but you know what? You could probably say that all the time that shit's gonna happen. And so you just have to, continue to buckle your chin strap and keep moving forward. And then I think, just internally, it's always tough to find the right people, whether you're a large company, but when you're a smaller company and a startup, it's really key because you're giving, option grants, you're giving, sometimes keys to the kingdom, and you're entrusting. And, oftentimes in large companies, those hires don't work out. And oftentimes, people that you brought in, they don't work out. So I think, there's been a couple setbacks there where I had confidence that they would have turned out a different way. But from a marketplace standpoint, no, I like where we are now. Like I said, especially now talking to the next stage of investors, where we're really clear on our distribution channels. We know what our pricing is. We know what the markets are. So yeah. To answer your question, yeah, we battled a lot, but and probably a couple of those were more so than most times. So,
Where do you see the company going?
outside of so we have a digital medical tr we have a couple of things we're all about, the digital authentication of those stakeholders in medical commerce. Even though it's $11 trillion across the globe, it comes down to three stakeholders: insurers, government payers, patients and providers. And we provide what we call a digital medical twin, for each of those, and then help from a payment perspective, messaging, data regulatory. I mean, these are huge issues, Jen. When we look at, we talked a little bit, I talked a little bit about COVID. COVID exposed a lot of things, but it also exposed a lot of ills that happen in the greater healthcare space, whether it be in the States or outside. Healthcare inequities, lack of healthcare access, lack of digitization, and we are really out in front of this. For instance, in the CARICOM region, I'm trying to build the framework so that there can be a sharing of resources. If there isn't, if there's a child in Jamaica that has, an a mental health eating disorder, and it's a male, and they have not a professional that has that expertise, but there's one in Bermuda. How can we share and authenticate that doctor has a standard credential? How can we assure the right regulatory framework of the data pre, post? How do we know that there's continuity of care? How do we know when there's a girl in Barbados that has to come up to CHOP for care? How do we make sure that the clinical information and also all of the other maybe social issue and environmental can go with her and also carry back with her? And it's a huge problem. It's a huge problem. And it leads to greater cost, lack of access, bad health, we can better health outcomes, all that stuff. And what I say is care should have no borders, but a lot of times people say, well, the technology's there. You could just do a Zoom right between. Well, yeah, but not so fast, right? I mean, there's so many things, again, like I said, what happens to the data pre-post? What happened to the data from the pediatric office over to CHOP? What happens, when children in Saudi Arabia have to come to Boston Children's or Children's Hospital in the UK and they go back? It's a total mess, and we're in the forefront, even though, again, we're a smaller company now. We're going through this next big equity raise, but there is no doubt that our message is being received. We are under contract, creating revenue on three continents. We're about ready to announce our first foray into the Africa continent. And so I think it's now, our game to lose, but I think our goal is to lay the digital highway for healthcare commerce that can ride on. And there could be other companies, that tap into that efficiency. But we're gonna think about it, like as the plumbing that makes all that stuff go around.
So how can people stay on top of your cutting edge technology? Do you have a blog post up on your site or news alerts as this unfolds?
Yeah, thank you, Jen. Yeah, so we have our social media that we get out there. We're also doing some things that are pretty interesting now. We call them Aperions. And it's similar structure to this, but we get these. I'm all about in disruption. If you're not talking about things, right? If you just keep on, that's the crazy uncle, right? We don't talk about
right.
it,
right? Yeah.
But we got to talk. You got to bring things up, and you got to sometimes be provocative, and you have to. So we had. These we call it opinions, and they're half hour Twitter spaces, X spaces, where we're bringing on some global leaders and thought leaders in certain aspects of healthcare and medical commerce and all kinds of stuff. We had one a couple of weeks ago around India diaspora, which was really intriguing. We had a incredible person, well accomplished doctor. Also works for the UN in India. We also had a woman, a leading global strategist here for a healthcare company in the States. And we talked about how do we leverage diaspora to actually, bring back and fix some of these ills that are happening in the India healthcare system, especially in the rural areas. How can we bring together a whole different type of financial model and technical model and listening to these two. Sometimes I just sit there and sit back and you ask a question and eat some popcorn and watch them go to town, right? And yeah. and then last week we had one with two leading veterinarians talking about One Health, which is the whole not concept, but thought process that what happens to animals is a preface to what happens to the human, whether it's in the home, because the pet, the dog's always around the carpet fibers and doing this, right? But also in a kind of commercial sense with Defense Department dogs, FEMA dogs, first responder dogs. And when you hear these people talk, it's just, you know, it's fascinating. And it all comes down to, we need access to the data. And you know, we need to break down these barriers of silos that happen with that data. And so we're building what I think that, you know, value propositions where we can induce and entice these current kind of locked up data institutions and kind of bring them into the tent, either kicking and screaming, or I'll expose them, or economically we'll show them a business model why it makes more sense for them to jump on the train. So
very cool. And people can see that every week.
Yeah, we're doing it right now. We're at a cadence probably every 2 weeks. And so if anybody wants to go on to the website, info@aperion.com, ask to sign up, or just better yet, just look on X, search Aperion, and then you'll be able to, you know, when you follow us, you'll be notified when our next session is.
Okay. And last question, what tips would you give to entrepreneurs who are in your shoes?
I think here's what I would say, that it's, you know, you got to wake up every day that there's a purpose and that you're ready to win that day, right? And that may sound cliche-ish, but when you're an entrepreneur, a lot of times, you know, you feel isolated. You feel like you're on an island. You know, you feel like a Tom Hanks, right?
Right.
And so I think, well, and the other thing that I would say as an entrepreneur, that you also have to have alignment with the folks that are around you, with your family, because I've seen so many entrepreneurs, and at times it's happened to me, but if you're young, and I'm just speaking as a male, you know, if you have a girlfriend or boyfriend, or you have a wife or husband, or you have family members, if that's not, if everybody hasn't bought into it, because there's going to be time constraints, there's going to be money and budget constraints in the house. If everybody hasn't bought in, then you're going to find yourself, you're battling to get your business done. But when you battle it on the home front as well, that's a tough one. And so I think, and again, I've seen people make decisions where the business was more important than, you know, their present spouse. And hey, that's a decision they make. But again, if you're having that candid conversation at home and everybody's not on the same page, I think you're fighting a losing battle. And I don't want to end on a downer note, but that would be, I think, part of my best advice. Make sure that there's clarity across everything.
Well, thank you so much, Dersh. Do you have your own social media that people can follow you, or should they just go to aperion.com?
Yeah, they can go to Aperion. I am on X as well. But yeah, if you hit us there, hit us on Instagram. And I'm also on LinkedIn. So.
Thank you so much for your insight today. We'll get this up soon.
All right.
Have a great Thanks, day. Yeah.
Be well.
You too. Well, that's it for now. Thanks everyone for joining us. Please reach out to me so I can feature you on my show. I do respond to everyone.
You can find me on my Instagram at Jennifer Sherlock or my business Instagram at JennaCom. And check out our new website coming soon, livewithoutanet.com. Thanks again, and I look forward to taking risks with you.